Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Loving Someone with Suicidal Thoughts, What Family, Friends, and Partners Can Say and Do. By Stacy Friedenthal, Ph.D., LCSW. Foreword by David A. Jobes, Ph.D. Narrated by Jen Jaden. Publisher's Note. This audiobook contains references to material present in the print and ebook editions of the book. Foreword. There is no one in the field of suicidology quite like Dr. Stacy Friedenthal. She has uniquely positioned herself professionally and has an uncanny ability to connect with the larger public through her Speaking of Suicide website, social media contributions, and her spectacular writing, both scholarly and her larger media contributions. Notably, Dr. Friedenthal is a person with her own lived experience of suicidality, and she has spoken bravely and with tremendous candor and insight about what it is like to struggle with suicide. Her voice from this perspective is often breathtaking in her abject honesty, courage, and transparency. Objectively, Dr. Friedenthal is an accomplished scholar with an excellent record of peer-reviewed empirical publications. She is an award-winning teacher as an associate professor at the University of Denver Graduate School of Social Work. Dr. Friedenthal is also an accomplished clinical provider who speaks with clarity about clinical truths relevant to working with someone who wrestles with thoughts of suicide. However, these descriptive details do not begin to capture what is truly special about Dr. Friedenthal's perspective on suicide, particularly about the subjective nature of suicidal suffering. It is not hyperbole to say that no one in the field writes about suicide quite like she does. Dr. Friedenthal began her professional career as a print journalist, and it shows because she knows how to write and how to tell a story with elegance, truth, and power. I was a huge fan of her first book, Helping the Suicidal Person: Tips and Techniques for Professionals. This first book was a gift to clinical providers, offering a veritable treasure trove of ideas for any clinician who works with suicide risk. Her 89 tips were informed by clinical science, superb therapeutic wisdom, and a practical clinical savvy that was richly illustrated by case examples. In her new book, Loving Someone with Suicidal Thoughts, What Family, Friends, and Partners Can Say and Do, lay people are now the beneficiaries of Dr. Friedenthal's wisdom and multi-layered perspective. Over the years, I have met with countless families and friends who are tortured by fear and anxiety about what to do for the person they love who teeters on the edge of life. In the United States, each year, more than 15 million adults and teens struggle with serious thoughts of suicide. This means many millions more people worry about those loved ones and often do not know what to say or how to say it before it is too late. For these millions, there is now this superb new resource. In the sections that follow, you will learn from Dr. Friedenthal everything you need to know about this tricky topic through her sensitivity, insight, compassion, and nothing short of grace. Dr. Friedenthal tackles this complex topic in her usual direct and sensible manner. Her ability to take the perspective of others is just astonishing. Each carefully crafted chapter walks the listener through practical and well-informed suggestions, with chapters addressing why suicide, asking difficult questions, brave listening, and if you feel manipulated, to name a few. The useful ideas and essential truths imparted in this book are richly supported with case illustrations and specific language on how to best support a loved one who is suicidal. Over my career, I have met with countless suicide loss survivors who often feel deep regret about what they did or did not do to help a loved one lost to suicide. This feeling is pervasive among suicide loss survivors. To this end, when I meet with family, friends, or partners of someone alive but struggling, I directly encourage them to do all they can to minimize future regrets about what they did or did not do. I ask, 10 years from now, when you look back, will you be able to take some measure of comfort that you did everything humanly possible to support your loved one? But now, when I have this conversation, I will also direct them to this book as the best, most sensible, and most clear-eyed guide to loving and supporting a person who is suicidal. This book provides validation, comfort, wisdom, and valuable guidance on how to optimally proceed. Ultimately, this book will help decrease suffering, and it will help save lives. David A. Jobes, Ph.D., ABPP, Professor of Psychology, Director of the Suicide Prevention Laboratory, The Catholic University of America, Washington, D.C. Introduction. If someone you love has suicidal thoughts, whether your teenage child, your partner, your friend, or anyone else you care about, I wrote this book for you. Yes, the person you love needs help, and hopefully they're receiving plenty of it. But your loved one isn't the only one experiencing emotional pain, stress, and challenges. You need support too. The prospect of somebody you love dying by suicide is terrifying. All the what-ifs can keep you up at night and hijack your thoughts during the day. Almost 50,000 people die by suicide every year in the United States. Sons and daughters, mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, partners, siblings, and other family and friends. Suicide cuts lives short and creates unfathomable loss for those left behind. It's no wonder you're scared. Your loved one's troubles can flood you not only with fear, but also with other uncomfortable emotions like sadness, guilt, regret, anger, and more. You might agonize over what to say and what to do, how to help, and how to cope. You desperately want your loved one to stay alive, and you also have your own life to live. There's just so much to navigate. There's hope, too. You can learn how to talk with someone about their suicidal thoughts, how to listen in ways that help the person to open up rather than shut down, and how to assist the person in getting professional help, staying safe, and feeling hope. And you can better understand the ways your loved one's suicidal thoughts affect you and ways to cope. This book can serve as your own personal guide. I wrote it with you in mind because I know much of what you're going through. I come at this material from just about every possible angle of loving someone with suicidal thoughts. A therapist who helps suicidal clients, a parent of somebody who experienced suicidal thoughts, and a person who's attempted suicide. Since 1995, I've dedicated my work to suicide prevention, first as a suicide hotline counselor, then as a social worker, researcher, and psychotherapist. My therapy practice specializes in counseling people with suicidal thoughts. I've also attended to countless worry-stricken parents, partners, and friends as they fretted about their loved one's emotional state, struggled to keep the person safe, and muddled through their own painful feelings and circumstances. 10 years ago, I created a website called Speaking of Suicide, speakingofsuicide.com. More than 6 million people from around the world have visited the site, and readers have left more than 10,000 comments. A great many of these comments come from people who love someone with suicidal thoughts. They ache to know both how to help the person and how to deal with their own feelings of helplessness, confusion, and sadness. My clients' and readers' experiences have taught me a tremendous amount about what family, friends, and others go through, and what helps when someone they love considers suicide. My expertise isn't only professional. Personally, I experienced the suicidal crises of my son when he was a teenager. My husband and I locked up our knives, razor blades, and medications in a digital safe in our bathroom, rushed our son to the emergency room more than once, and lived moment by moment with the wrenching fears of what we knew all too well could happen. During that time, I was writing the book, Helping the Suicidal Person, Tips and Techniques for Professionals. Yet, I couldn't make my son's suicidal thoughts go away. I could, at least, use my knowledge to help him stay safe, walk him through creating a safety plan, connect him to professional helpers, teach him coping skills, and manage my own stress and fear. Now in his 20s, our son made it to the other side of those harrowing crises. He permitted me to share his experiences here in the hope it helps others to know. Some of my insights come from my own struggles. Starting as an adolescent, I had urges to kill myself on and off over the years. In my 20s, I attempted suicide more than once. I've been doing better for a long time, thankfully, but my own lived experiences taught me firsthand the challenges that can beset people with suicidal thoughts and their loved ones. You can see that some personal experiences fuel my passion. Yet, while my personal journey has shaped my interests, this book isn't a personal account. Over the last 25 years, I've read countless articles and books about the challenges faced by suicidal people and the people who love them. I've also witnessed these challenges, as well as recovery and growth, in my psychotherapy clients and their loved ones. This book's advice flows from the professional literature and my clinical practice. If there's an emergency now, this book is intended to infuse you with knowledge you can use on your own. If you or the person you love are experiencing an emergency, please stop listening and get help now. If someone is in imminent danger of acting on suicidal thoughts or has already attempted suicide, do not leave the person alone, if possible. You have several options in an emergency. If you're in the United States, call 988 or 800-273-8255. Alternatively, 800-273-TALK. Both will take you to the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Take the person yourself to the nearest emergency room if it's safe to do so. In urgent and dangerous situations, it may be necessary to call 911. Chapter 6 gives cautionary advice on this. Those tips apply if your loved one needs help right away. What if you need help right now, too? A loved one's suicidal danger can trigger many painful feelings for you. If you have trouble getting through the day, meeting your obligations with work or family, or feeling hope or happiness, this book should be a supplement, not a replacement, for professional help. Especially if you are thinking of suicide, please get help from a therapist, psychiatrist, primary care physician, or other health professional. A trained professional can provide a space for you to vent, help you problem solve, and in general, partner with you on this stressful journey. Whether or not you have suicidal thoughts, you can get help for yourself by calling the Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988 or 800-273-8255. Alternatively, 1-800-273-TALK. What this book covers. Loving someone with suicidal thoughts gives advice, support, and practical tools that you can start using right away. Quite a few books already address loving someone with a mental illness such as depression, bipolar disorder, or borderline personality disorder. Yet many people with suicidal thoughts don't have a mental illness, and the books about mental illness for family and friends usually devote little attention to suicidality. The clear focus of loving someone with suicidal thoughts enables it to dig deeply into one of the biggest challenges you might ever face with someone you love. The book addresses the questions I encounter most often. Why do people turn to suicide? What are clues that someone might be in danger of acting on suicidal thoughts? How do I ask someone if they're thinking of suicide? What can I do to help someone stay safe? When should I call the police? What treatments are there for suicidality? What can I do to help after somebody attempts suicide? How do I persuade someone to get professional help? How do I tackle conflicts with someone who has suicidal thoughts when the last thing I want to do is create more stress? How can I deal with feeling sad, manipulated, fearful, angry, burned out, helpless, and more? How can I help the person feel and cope better? How can I help myself feel and cope better too? Do people usually recover from suicidal thoughts? Chapter 1 gives you a big picture view of myths, facts, and biases about suicide. I've loosely arranged the rest of the chapters in chronological order from start to finish of a suicidal crisis, but everyone's path is different. It won't hurt to listen to the book out of order if you want to. I wrote Loving Someone with Suicidal Thoughts for a diverse audience, from parents to partners, from family to friends. If you're concerned about a child, you should know the book mostly applies to adolescents and adults. Occasionally, you'll come across advice about children, like the guidance in Chapter 8 on talking with youngsters about a family member's suicide attempt. This book's guidance can't be presumed to apply to children with suicidal thoughts because their needs and communication skills are so different. Also, the book's advice might not apply if your loved one is dying of a terminal illness and lives where physicians can legally prescribe medicine to end one's life. Trying to prevent a loved one from ending their life in this context could create new strife and stress during your final days with the person. It's debatable whether such acts constitute suicide. In fact, in states with death and dignity laws, authorities are legally required not to classify physician-assisted deaths as suicide. The book often uses the phrase loved one as a kind of shorthand for the person you care about or the person you're worried about. It might help you when you see your loved one to substitute the name of the person whose suicidal thoughts prompted you to listen to this book. You don't need to actually love the person. The book's recommendations apply whether you're in love, love someone in your family, love a friend platonically, used to love someone, like an ex, or just think the person you're concerned about is kind of cool. Love need not be felt to be enacted. Taking care while listening. Suicide is literally a life or death issue. So loving someone with suicidal thoughts isn't light listening. Just as you'll find advice in this book to take care of yourself while you support someone, I hope you'll also take care while listening. Here are some tips. Take breaks whenever you need to. Stop here and there to take in several deep breaths. You might want to pause the book for a while and do something for pleasant distraction, like take a brisk walk, or watch a TV show. Listen to the book in the order that works best for you. You won't lose anything by skipping around. Talk with friends or family about what you listen to here, and refer to Chapter 3 if you feel the need to hide your loved one's suicidality from others. Get professional help if you can, or get support in other ways using the resources listed in the print and ebook versions of this book. It's also a good idea to write in a journal or notebook as you listen. Throughout the book, I ask questions for you to consider deeply. Writing will help you understand and work through your feelings. If you're not the type to journal, jotting down ideas on scratch paper or in your phone's notes app can help you process what's going through your head and heart. Whatever approach you take, I hope you will embrace the book's overriding themes. There's a lot you can do to support your loved one, and you can honor your own needs too. And I hope, as you immerse yourself in this book, you'll feel less frightened, powerless, and alone in your journey. It's difficult when someone you love has suicidal thoughts. You're about to learn many ways to better understand the person, cope with your own emotions, communicate, build safety, resolve conflicts, inspire hope, and take care of yourself. You can get through these stressful times. This book shows you how. Chapter 1. Why Suicide? Humans are endowed with a deeply ingrained instinct to stay alive. A hiker in Utah, trapped beneath a boulder for 5 days, sawed off his arm with a pocket knife to avoid dying. A man who fell the equivalent of 20 stories from a cliff in the Peruvian Andes crawled miles to safety, despite suffering from a badly broken leg, hypothermia, dehydration, and starvation. And it doesn't take a catastrophe for people's survival instinct to assert itself. Day by day, people look both ways before they cross the street, wash their hands to avoid infection, and take other life-saving measures. Even so, some people's survival instinct appears to wither, or worse, it abandons them altogether. Their mind turns to suicide. Some carry out these thoughts. Every year, roughly 800,000 people around the world end their own life. Many millions more try. Why? This single three-letter word torments many people who love someone with suicidal thoughts. Maybe it torments you, too. Maybe you want to shake your loved one by the shoulders and ask, "How can you want to die? Why isn't my love enough to make you want to live? Why can't you be happy or at least at peace with what you have in life?" Or maybe you keenly understand how much the person suffers and you grieve for them. Any way you look at it, it's painful, isn't it? In this chapter, you'll note what we know about suicidality. First, you'll hear about the many different types of suicidal thoughts. Then you'll learn what makes people more likely and less likely to become suicidal. The chapter's last section discusses myths and facts about suicide, and it invites you to challenge your own judgments. Suicidal thoughts. A desire to die or thoughts of purposefully ending one's life are considered suicidal thoughts. They're not rare. In a single year, roughly 12 million adults in the United States seriously consider ending their life, and 1.4 million adults attempt suicide. Among high school students, almost 20% report seriously considering suicide in the prior year, and 10% attempt suicide. The nature of suicidal thoughts can be dramatically different from person to person. A passing idea, an urge, a comforting fantasy, a disquieting obsession, a fully formed plan. Here are examples of what people experience. I'm worthless. I don't deserve to live, even if I wanted to. People think I'm happy. On Instagram, I make it look like my life is great, but it's all fake. Nobody would like me if they really knew me. My parents and little sister will cry if I kill myself, but they'll get over it. In the long run, they're better off without me. Monique, age 14.
My brother-in-law killed himself 5 years ago. It devastated my sister and her 4 kids. Still does, years later. I would never want to put my worst enemy through what they've gone through. But in the last few weeks, I've had thoughts of killing myself. I don't want to. My brain just tells me again and again that suicide will solve my problems. I push these awful thoughts away, but they keep coming back. How do I make them stop?
Raul, age 48. I first thought of suicide when I was 7 years old. My grandma died, and I wanted to go be in heaven with her. Now, I'm a physician. I have a wife I love, and a nice house, and the best cat in the world. But if something stressful happens, I think of killing myself. It's like an old friend. In a weird way, thinking of suicide calms me down. If I didn't know I could end things whenever I want, I'd feel trapped.
Yolanda, age 31. Obviously, there's no prototypical suicidal person. Everyone is unique. But people's thoughts of suicide usually reflect some mix of the following distinctions, to varying degrees. Passive versus active. Many people don't want to be alive anymore, but they don't consider making that happen themselves. They wish circumstances, God, fate, or some other external force would end their life. They might make statements like these. I want to die. If only I could go to sleep and never wake up. God, please take me. These are passive suicidal thoughts because they don't involve the person taking action to end their life. Compare that to active suicidal thoughts. I want to kill myself. Or, I'm going to end my life. With versus without intent. Without intent to act on suicidal thoughts, suicide is an idea, not a goal. Things become especially perilous when someone intends to carry out their suicidal thoughts within minutes or hours. Sometimes, a person's suicidal intentions become clear only in tragic hindsight. The person updated their will, or gave away cherished belongings, or bought a pistol the week before their death. Most often, the only way to know if someone intends to act on suicidal thoughts is for the person to tell you. Chapters 4 and 5 cover ways to make these conversations easier. Fleeting versus obsessive. Fleeting thoughts last only a few seconds or minutes. They might come rarely or many times a day, but briefly. At the other extreme, suicidal thoughts can take on an obsessive quality, with suicide preoccupying the person much of the time. Vague versus specific. Some people think of suicide very generally. I want to kill myself. Others have specific, detailed thoughts about how, when, and where, what to do to prepare, who to say goodbyes to, and more. Generally speaking, the more obsessive and detailed suicidal thoughts are, the more dangerous. Not always, though. Some people think of suicide with great specificity, but have little or no intent to carry out their plan. Conversely, some people attempt suicide without having planned it for more than a few minutes before acting. Silent versus loud. People with auditory hallucinations can hear their thoughts as if someone else were talking to them. The voices people hear can command them to end their life. Some people recognize their hallucinations as a symptom of extreme stress
or mental illness such as schizophrenia, bipolar...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?